And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Breon, Senior Vice President of TruSpec Golf, joined by Golf.com's Managing Editor for Equipment, Jonathan Wall. Jonathan, first time in quite a few years, I think, you were able to skip the PGA show, but I am here. I'm very envious.
I'm sure you are. Yeah, this is a first for me, and as long as I can remember, I'm out at Torrey Pines for at least the first 3 days of Farmers Insurance and get a chance to see what's in the bags for guys as really this is, you know, I know last week in Palm Springs was the first PGA Tour event back on North American soil. But yeah, this is kind of where it all really begins for a lot of the big names, and had a chance to sit down and talk to Justin Rose for a while about his gear and ask Tiger about some of his testing and peeking in bags. So it is a busy week here. I'm sure you're busy, although I heard it's actually kind of chilly with some wind out in Orlando. I don't know what happened over there. They turned on the fan.
So for those of our listeners who have never had an opportunity to get to the PGA show, you know, this is typically a trade show for the industry. Last year, they opened it up to the general public. It is a massive, massive convention. At one time, PGA show was the only convention that sold out all the rooms in the city. The Orlando Orange County Convention Center, it's a gigantic place, and the PGA show typically takes up all of the space in that convention center. On the Tuesday prior to the show, they host a demo day out at Orange County National, and Orange County National has quite the setup out on the driving range.
That's a huge driving range.
Yeah, it's a circular driving range. Little tidbit that a lot of folks don't know. You know that Tiger ball bouncing ad where he was tapping the ball?
Yep.
Doing some ball juggling.
That was OCN.
That was all out at, yeah, that was yeah. All shot out at Orange County National, actually. So it's a gigantic property. They have, I think it's about a 400-yard in diameter circular driving range. And so all of the major OEMs set up stations and let people go out and try the new gear. This is a lot of people's first exposure to it. You know, the demo day is not quite as important for me. Obviously, we've been working with the new gear for quite some time, but it's amazing to see what goes into these demo day presentations. And it was not all that fun out there today due to the weather.
I can imagine it wasn't. Yeah, I heard it was windy and cold. I'm curious, Tim, was there anything that you saw walking around that caught your eye?
You know, a couple of shaft products, nothing in the club head department, because you and I got to all take a peek behind the curtain,
right?
You know, many months back. It was interesting to see the reactions of others, I would definitely say, with some of these products. You know, TaylorMade was not at the PGA show this year, nor were they last year. So their absence was definitely noted. A couple of the prominent shaft manufacturers also decided that this was not a year that they wanted to attend. Callaway had a huge setup. The Titleist presentation was amazing. They obviously are getting behind SM8 in a big way. And then Ping was introducing their new G710 iron, which is a really neat product, cool looking product. It carries forward a lot of the innovations that they had in the 700 product into a cooler finish and a couple of tech refinements to that 710 product. So it was upper 30s to start the day, 40s throughout most of the day, blowing about 35, 40 miles an hour.
That's not fun. It was not fun.
I kind of made a hot lap. I'll tell you what, the most fun I had was driving around a fat scooter all day. I don't know if do you know what a fat scooter is?
No. What is that?
You've probably seen them, just didn't know what they were called. Fat scooters are those golf scooters where you can strap your clubs to the back, and they're just like, you know, they're little scooters that you can take out on the golf course. You can drive them almost all the way up on the green because they have big fat tires. But those things are so much fun. I had a chance to play golf with one of those fat scooters up in Bend, Oregon this last summer. We have a location at a really amazing golf course called Pronghorn, and they rent those fat scooters out for rounds. If you ever have an opportunity to get out on the golf course on one of these scooters, do it, because they are so much fun and it's a very different experience. Really cool thing about these scooters is you can play a full round of 18 holes in less than 2 hours, because obviously you don't have to drive to your partner's ball. You can go directly to your shot every single time. So
I would pay to see you on one of those scooters.
I have some video. Oh, maybe we'll have to put that on.
Put it out on social media. Feed. Yes, please.
Yeah, I actually did a couple of tricks, a couple of wheelies, a couple of jumps and an endo on my fat scooter.
So, wow.
I don't think the guys
tearing it up
quite expecting a Yeah, I don't think the guys were expecting a 300-pound fella to have bike skills, but anyways, it was a lot of fun out there. So we've got a lot of cool topics to talk about this week. One of the really big ones over the last week has been Sergio Garcia, and we'll let you get into that. We've got a hot take by Jack Nicklaus himself on Tiger and his gear and how Tiger's gear has kind of made it so that he, you know, he has an advantage out there, specifically the gear that he learned how to play with. We've got an interesting story regarding Rory McIlroy and the line that he is no longer using on his golf ball. Got a mailbag question, and then a really great interview from the folks over at Bridgestone that you were able to capture here recently. A lot of real great Tiger content as far as how he is testing golf balls and all the prototyping process. And, oh, by the way, Bridgestone is releasing a new golf ball, as we've mentioned, and this thing is absolutely spectacular. So let's get started. You know, we heard some stuff come out of the tour last week regarding Sergio Garcia, and I heard he has a bag full of Ping product, right? What do you have for us here?
Yeah, well, I would say a bag full of Ping product is certainly accurate. You know, I was lamenting in a story here recently, Tim, about the lack of just any sort of real equipment news during the signing period. Typically, there's usually one. And you know, last year it came later on because Francesco Molinari, while he did start the year in Hawaii with a bunch of Callaway product in the bag and in a carry bag, actually, he never really kind of let on that he was going to be signing a deal. And so we had to wait until Bay Hill to finally get word that he was going to be signing with Callaway. But this is a different situation here with Sergio Garcia. It, you know, he shows up to an event at the HSBC in Abu Dhabi. And what do you have in the bag, Sergio? But as you mentioned, a whole bunch of Ping product. And I think for me especially, and again, this goes back to my golf equipment nerd ways, but I spend a lot of time on Getty zooming in on photos. And it's become a very popular pastime, and just happened to zoom in on Sergio's bag and notice that he had a set of Ping Blueprint irons in the new Glide 3.0 wedges. And so did a little digging, reached out to Ping, and golf.com was actually, we broke the story. I know a couple others piggybacked on it and didn't really ever say anything about who had initially broken the story, but we did and talked to Ping, and they kind of gave me a little bit of a rundown and said that Sergio had reached out during the holidays asking for product to test. And from there, I reached out to Callaway, and they confirmed that indeed Callaway and Sergio were parting ways. It was an amicable departure, and you know, Sergio was now a free agent, so he's using Ping product.
Now, was Sergio at the end of his deal with Callaway here, Jonathan?
He was, you know, and that was the interesting thing, Tim.
That wasn't a really long deal, was it?
No.
It seems like it was only 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it, you're right. It started in 2018, right after he won the Masters, and it was 2018 and 2019. But Tim, I think there was a little bit of you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Sergio, late in the year, switched to a Titleist Pro V1 golf ball, and he actually won, I think, in his third start with the Titleist Pro V1 at the KLM. Yeah, won it on the European Tour. So there were some changes that he was making that kind of made you wonder if you know, if maybe something was going on. But I don't think anybody really expected that they were going to be parting ways. And Sergio discussed it and just said that it was, you know, more than anything, it was just kind of not being able to get comfortable with the golf ball, was what he said in his interview.
The Callaway ball.
Yep, correct. And so that was kind of, you know, that's a big part for Callaway when you're a staffer is playing the golf ball. And, you know, that's not to say that it's not a good ball. It's just, you know, for Sergio, he just couldn't get comfortable with it. And that's kind of what he said matter-of-factly. And so because of that, they just kind of felt it was better to go their separate ways. So yeah, Sergio's back in the market. You know, Tim, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. And I pointed this out in a story I wrote recently. You know, he had a couple of, I would say he was a hot button topic a couple of times last year. You know, we had the bunker issue in Saudi Arabia where he absolutely tore up a bunker in frustration.
Wow, what a disaster that was.
Yeah. Well, then you also think about,
and then the greens.
Yeah, the greens. And then you have to think about also when he had the weird concession, no concession against Matt Kuchar, in Austin at the match play. And that was just another awkward one. I kind of wonder, it does make me wonder if somebody's going to take a shot at Sergio and try and sign him to a full deal. I think somebody will, because he's still a marquee name, but you always kind of wonder with some of the baggage, especially within the last year, you know, what happens. But yeah, still a free agent now. He's got a tailor-made fairway wood in the bag in addition to the Ping product. Also using a Ping putter, Ping driver, G410. Yep. So there's a lot of Ping product in there, which would, again, makes you wonder if he's just simply testing it because he really likes it, or if he's testing it because he's angling for a deal. So I guess we'll see what happens.
So no deal right now.
No deal, correct.
No deal right now. Playing the ball that he's more comfortable with.
Yep, still playing the perfect one. Yep.
We're starting to see this, more and more, that athletes that, Sergio still has a lot of great golf left in his career, clearly. You know, when we're talking about athletes, 40, 45 years old for a PGA Tour player is hardly old. They still are very competitive and win. I mean, heck, look at Phil.
Exactly.
As he likes to tell everybody, he's still hitting bombs.
See, so he still has lots of bombs in him.
but the point here being, I think a lot of these brands view some of these players that are maybe past their best years as being higher risk, less return. They move the needle a little bit less. Of course, when you're talking about Phil and you're talking about Tiger, these are exceptions to that rule. But, you know, we've seen a lot of these athletes as they get a little bit past, I don't want to say past their prime, but past their best years, they end up rolling off of deals with manufacturers that they've been supporting them for a long time. I mean, Sergio was with TaylorMade for his entire career, now spends 2 years with Callaway, now he's on the Ping. Rosie had spent 20 years with TaylorMade, now he's off to Hamna. So it's kind of interesting to see the landscape evolving and changing when it comes to these equipment deals.
Yeah. No kidding.
And it just goes to show the average player out there what really is the most important piece of equipment to most of these pros.
Golf ball.
The golf ball is actually probably the most important piece to most of these pros. We've discussed this a few times back in the Nike days. You know, Nike was really active about trying to build a stable of athletes, beyond just Tiger Woods. And, you know, some folks weren't all that comfortable with the golf ball that Nike had out. The ball that Tiger played, as we've mentioned, was actually a Bridgestone. So he was playing something that was completely different than most of the Nike players. But the thing that kept some players from signing Nike deals was the ball. So, you know, if you're playing a specific brand, a specific type of golf ball, just because your tour player, you know, your favorite tour player is using it, or because it's what everybody else uses, that's probably not a great reason to play the ball. And I would definitely drill down a little bit more thoroughly on golf ball, testing, fitting, check out how it works with your putter and wedge. It's something we've discussed numerous times on Fully Equipped. So really interesting thing coming out of the Sergio Garcia camp. And with that, let's get into our second tour topic. And that was a little nugget coming out of Jack Nicklaus.
Jack, always with the hot takes. Hot take Jack. That's my favorite Jack.
It seems like he's getting a little more engaged these days in the hot takes.
I love it.
You know, Jack turned 80 this last week. Wow, that's crazy. And
he turned 80 today.
Was it today? Yeah, it was today. Turned 80. And I have to say this. I'm probably going to get a lot of flack on social media. To me, Jack Nicklaus is still the greatest golfer of all time. I respect Tiger Woods and everything he did over that tremendous stretch. I absolutely think Tiger Woods had the best 10-year stretch of any golfer ever. But when you look at the durability of Jack, when you look at, over 30 years, three decades, he was winning tournaments, winning majors. You know, not only did he win all the majors that he won, but he finished second in just as many as well. So, you look at that career record, and the longevity, the durability, it's just amazing to have played at that level for so long. But specifically related to Tiger, what was he in the press about this week regarding Tiger's gear?
Yeah. I mean, it's you could call it a hot take. I think it's a fairly accurate take, but Jack held court and was talking to a few reporters, a couple of them that were actually at his house, which I think is just flat out awesome, that Jack still invites a couple of reporters, and that he still takes the time to talk to the media. You know, in a day and age where everything is just kind of so planned out and sterile, you know, Jack's just holding court talking. And that, quite honestly, is one of my favorite things, not to go off the rails here, but I think about the memorial. You know, that's actually one of my favorite events to cover out of the tour season, because it gives me an opportunity to sit there and listen to Jack. And then after his official time talking, all the media comes up in front of him, and he's at the day, and he just holds court in just a little media scrum. Sometimes it's lasted up to another hour, which is just so cool to listen to Jack just wax poetic about, you know, his time being a professional golfer, what he thinks about today's current pros, even non-golf topics. It's one of my favorite times every year, is to just get to listen to Jack hold court. And so they were talking to Jack about the modern game. And he had, you know, something to say a little bit about, you know, the equipment for today's generation versus what he was playing back in his. And he said, I think the equipment we played was far more challenging and rewarded us more for hard work than the equipment of today. I may get a little static about that because the average golfer actually likes the equipment for today, and I understand that. You know, and I think that's kind of one of those things where, look, Jack's got a point. You know, his equipment that he was using back in his heyday, you had to hit it right on the screws. And I go, you know, there's a video actually that a really well put together video that the European Tour shot, and I would recommend people go to check it out, where they had a couple of Callaway staffers, including new Callaway staffer Matt Wallace. They had him hit all of the Callaway drivers over the generations, and they picked one from each one of the generations, and they let these two Callaway staffers hit them. And go watch how they hit the clubs from the, you know, 60s and 70s versus today's equipment. They couldn't keep the stuff from the 60s and 70s on the map. And a couple of them they topped. And again, you think about that. You think about the equipment that Tiger was using. You know, Tiger, I will say this, Tim. You know, for a lot of the people that may say, well, Tiger is winning with equipment where you can't miss it. Tiger Woods is you know, about as old school as it comes out here. He still plays very traditional lofts on his irons. He was one of the last guys to switch to adjustable woods. He was still using steel in his driver. He was one of the last guys to switch out of that.
We discussed that.
Yeah, you know, was using persimmon woods. This is not a situation where Tiger has fully embraced
an extremely spinny golf ball, like right. A spinny golf ball that I would say is more close to a Tour Bellotta from back in the day.
Exactly. That's my point here is that I agree. You know, Tiger used modern day equipment for the most part, but it wasn't like he fully embraced it. He was playing the stuff that worked for him, and more often than not, it wasn't really the latest and greatest.
So this was probably something that was a bit of a conflict for Nike Golf, in that their premier athlete preferred to play golf clubs that the average player could never, ever even attempt to play. And so, you know, this was probably a challenge, you know, throughout that time with Nike Golf, that, you know, obviously everybody wants to go out and buy the gear that Tiger's playing, but, you know, if you did, you'd shoot 100. So, bottom line here is there's a lot of merit in this idea, actually. So the concept, you know, the summation of this very quickly is aim small, miss small. If your tolerances are so razor thin as far as hitting a good shot or bad shot, it demands absolute precision on every single shot that you make. So do I prescribe to this? I do think there's a bit of merit here. Now, with that being said, you know, if I'm a parent and I'm raising a junior golfer, that doesn't mean go out and get them, you know, the hardest to hit muscle back blades that you can find, because you're going to develop a better golfer that way. The game still has to be fun and enjoyable. But on one hand, I do understand the concept of, you know, playing equipment that demands the most out of the player is going to mean that as this equipment has evolved and become easier to hit over the last 15 years, these players that were exposed to these products that were more difficult to hit are going to stand to hit these newer products even better than, you know, the rest of the field. And I do understand that. You know, there's a gentleman by the name of Michael Bentley. He's one of the creators. He's no longer with Blast Golf, but Blast Golf, you know, is a device that you use on your putter, and it provides some data about your putting stroke and gives you feedback. And Michael was one of the pioneers of that Blast Motion system. And no longer with Blast, he's off doing some other things these days, involved with a new company called Paradigm Performance. But he's got a really interesting take on gear. He actually has all of his students get two sets of clubs. One's a set of practice clubs, and then the other is a set of gamers. And the practice clubs are actually fit and built to make all of the flaws that they tend to exhibit in their swing worse. Not the flaws worse, but make the outcomes worse. So let's say you're somebody that hits a slice. He fits somebody into gear, and this is very, very, you know, dumbed down and generalized here, but best analogy and example I can use. He'll fit somebody into a set of clubs, if you're a slicer, that are actually designed to slice even more. And the idea is that in your efforts to correct it, when you get into now a more draw-based product, that it's going to move the needle even further, and you basically have a set of gamers that is designed to mask your flaw and a set of practice clubs that's designed to enhance your flaw. So kind of an interesting approach. I don't know if I would go to that extreme per se, but
I don't know if I would either.
But, you know, I do think that, you know, Tiger's ball striking prowess, especially with his irons, probably has to do with the fact that he learned how to play the game with MP29s. They were very difficult to hit, extremely small sweet spots. One last little hot take on this, and I know this through motion capture research. You know, a really good friend of mine, Michael Neff, you know, started up Gears Sports, which was kind of the updated version of the system I used to work with when I worked with TaylorMade. And with motion capture, if you put, you know, the different arrays, which are the little silver markers on the club, you can actually figure out where people are hitting on the club. And so when you look at strike patterns, the average strike pattern on the PGA Tour has actually gotten larger over the last 10 to 15 years. So, you know, this little dime pattern you see right in the center of the face has expanded out to, you know, somewhere between the size of a nickel and a quarter nowadays. Now, most of those patterns are right in the dead center of the face, but the bottom line here, because this equipment is a little less demanding, they spend a little less time trying to hit it right out of the dead center of the club. And they're more concerned about, you know, face angle and speed and angle of attack and pathway. So, you know, we do see that this forgiving equipment across the board, even in the players' iron categories that are designed for better players, compared to the older generation equipment, is something that is players are getting away with a little bit more, so they're not quite as exact. So interesting take by Jack. And with that, let's get into our gear spotlight for the week. We had a story come out recently regarding Rory and his decision to go away from using a line on the golf ball. You know, this is really interesting to me, being a putter guy and believing in the optics of putting. But it seems, I guess he's said that his improvements that he's seen in putting are due, you know, in some part to the fact that he's no longer using a line.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, Tim, because I actually agree with Rory on this. I'm actually not an optical guy either. I've tried to even use a line, even using the side stamp on a golf ball for me, for whatever reason. I just have, it always kind of complicates things, and maybe I'm just a complicated guy and I overthink things anyway, but I've always just put the golf ball down with the blank space looking up at me, because I cannot look at anything, whether it's side stamp or the front stamp on the golf ball. I can't do it. And Rory said that anytime he sees a line, he struggles with his speed. And he says he's so into what he's doing that he loses the connection with the target. And that's something I can, you know, I can relate to. I've struggled with that. And, you know, Rory's one of those guys, he's always been very much a feel guy. And one of the things that Dave Stockton taught him early on when he was working with Dave was, you know, Rory had a tendency to really kind of work too many practice strokes into his putting routine. And one of the things that he found was really just looking at the hole and kind of gauging the distance, standing up and pulling the trigger. It works. And I actually talked to Dave about it one time, and he kind of brought that up on working with Rory that way. And I tried it. And at first it was weird. I will say not having a practice stroke, but I've actually just started doing it. I mean, I almost never use a practice stroke when I putt and use more feel. And I think that's kind of what Rory's saying here without the line is he kind of is just more in tune with kind of getting a better read on pace and speed when he doesn't have to think of one more thing. And look, I think the optics that are being put on golf balls nowadays, you think about the triple track technology that Callaway's using on their golf ball.
Picks with TaylorMade.
Yeah, I mean, picks with TaylorMade, Tim. I mean, you're right. There are a lot of great options out there. You even think about the TrueViz that Callaway has, the one that looks like a little soccer ball.
Titleist has a custom option on their golf balls too, as far as graphics imprinting that are designed to enhance optics. I saw that recently.
Yeah,
they do,
just, and they're bringing out that side stamp that's been incredibly popular. It looks kind of like a T on the side of the golf ball. They're bringing that out now with the new Tour Soft. It's been so popular, they're going to roll it out on a retail golf ball. But yeah, I think this just goes to show you that it's just different strokes for different folks. Everybody is different when it comes to what they benefit from. Some are going to benefit from having a line on the golf ball, and they're going to think you're crazy if you don't. Whereas, others might not, and that again goes into just putting as well, dots versus lines. And you and I have talked about this before, what can players benefit from? I've talked to Jason Day before, and he's gone back and forth between a line and no line on his putter. So again, it's more personal preference, but it is kind of interesting when you hear a guy like Rory say that he doesn't use a line on his golf ball because it leads to a struggle with his speed. That, I think there probably are golfers out there that can relate to what he's saying.
I definitely can as well. When we're talking about putting a line on the ball or a line on the putter, everybody thinks that if they put a line on the ball and they line the line up to their target and then they match the line on the putter up to the ball, that they will be perfectly aimed. Not so much. Unfortunately, due to a factor in optics called parallax distortion, which is pretty complicated to understand. We'll save that for another
podcast. Save it for another one. That's right.
But the bottom line is, due to that factor of parallax distortion, what may look and appear like those two lines are in perfect alignment together, because of where our eyes are positioned in our address position and a bunch of other optical factors, in fact, those two lines may not match at all. So, and then the problem is okay, what if you use the line on the ball and you set up in your address position, and when you get into your address position, the line on the ball no longer looks like it's pointed at the target that you intend to play? Well, now we've got a problem because we're not trusting it. So the best piece of advice I can give to players out there when it comes to lines and no lines, whether it's lines on your golf ball, lines on your putter, is to test it. Test it with some data. Use, specific tools that are designed to test these sorts of things. Go to a PGA professional or a professional club fitter, come into a TrueSpec. Let us take a look at your putting and see what really helps you get lined up and puts you in the best position to square the face at impact. Just because the club face is not perfectly aimed does not mean that you're going to have trouble putting. There are a lot of great players, Tiger Woods being one of them, who don't aim at their intended target. I know that seems crazy. Tiger aims about 2 degrees right of his target. I guarantee you Tiger is aware of this. So bottom line here is, get tested, do it, using data, some kind of quantitative tool. And there will be some combination of line or no line or dot on the ball or putter that enhances your optics and lets you square the face at impact more frequently. You do that, you're going to make more putts.
Exactly. And I think the one thing that I will say, Tim, that you hit on is just test. Don't be afraid to try different options and, go out there and see what works best for you. Don't just stick with what you've got. Again, it kind of just goes back to testing equipment. There may be a better option that you're not thinking about.
And let's get into our mailbag for the week. We have a question that came in. Ben DeGagne asked, What are the main differences between a Scotty Cameron Circle T and the regular putter that we buy at retail on the shelves?
Oh, man.
Great question, Ben. Yeah. Jonathan, let's get into this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference here, Tim, and you know this, is just the material that's used. Most Scotty Camerons, and I'll use the new Special Select that, have you seen the new Special Select, Tim?
Sure have.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's probably one of the best looking Camerons, retail Camerons, that he's come out with in some time. And that one's made out of 303 stainless steel. It's still a really good head material to use, but it's a whole lot, you know, more economical to mass produce putters using 303 stainless versus the German stainless steel. That's the GSS. If you ever hear somebody talk about Tiger Woods' putter, Dustin Johnson's used GSS. A whole lot of tour players, even, you know, Justin Thomas has used it. The GSS stands for German stainless steel. And it is just simply a more expensive material that's used. It has a different feel coming off the ball. It's something that Scotty's used for his tour putters. And that really is the big difference. You know, there will be, if you were to take a retail Cameron versus, let's say, you know, a 009, like Jordan Spieth's putter, you know, you're going to see some subtle differences in the shaping of that putter. You know, the top line might be a little bit wider on one versus the other. One might be a little bit flatter than the other. But again, it really comes down to the materials, the circle T, the little CT that you see stamped on there. That adds a lot of money to those putters because those have been made for tour players, or they've spent time out on tour. And that's why you're seeing the difference in the price tag. But again, the average golfer is not going to notice a difference between a Circle T versus a regular Cameron. They're going to have just as much success with that retail version. You know, the Circle Ts, in my opinion, are a status symbol. And it's kind of like owning a Maserati or a Ferrari. You probably don't need one of those cars, but if you can afford it, and you can have it in, you know, have it in your garage, or in this case, have that Circle T in your bag, go for it.
Yeah. You know, Circle T putters have, you know, attracted a cult following. Always wanted to, I want to get George Lopez on the pod one time. He supposedly has one of the most unbelievable Circle T collections that, you know, anybody on the planet has. And I'd love to get into that with him.
For sure.
But, you know, this was something that started after the Cherry Bomb, you know, Tiger putter, as Scotty wanted to bring more prominence to all the work he was doing with tour players. Specifically the really elite tour players. You mentioned the material, and the material is a huge part of this because it contributes so largely to feel. But then another really big important factor to consider is that many of these Circle Ts have been designed specifically for the player that they end up, you know, being built for. And what do I mean by that? I don't just mean as far as length and weight and things like that. I'm talking about little tweaks to the top line. You know, you go with Brad Faxon's Fax Day, right? And that's a thinner top line than what you're going to get on a similar Laguna model. It's got a deeper cavity, so it's going to have a different sound. You look at Tiger's putter, and that neck weld, that plumber's neck, is welded a little bit further back than it is on a traditional, you know, Newport. So you're going to have these little nuances that are slightly different as far as tweaks to the shaping. Potentially, you're going to have a radically different neck than what's available at retail. You could have a flow neck or slant neck put into a head that at retail is not available with that neck option. So that's going to change a lot of design features of the club. Bottom line regarding Circle T is this is, you know, the premium of the premium when we're talking, you know, putters, and a lot of it has to do with the trust the tour players develop in these products. So great question by Ben. And with that, I think it would be great to get into our interview with Bridgestone.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to interview the guys at Bridgestone about their new ball, Jonathan.
Yeah, I did. You know, and this, in my opinion, Tim, may be the biggest story coming out of this equipment launch season. I know we're always talking about new drivers and irons, and look, there are a lot of great products out there that are worth talking about, and we've talked about a lot of them. But I think that this new Bridgestone Tour B golf ball has a revolutionary urethane cover. It has what they're calling reactive urethane, which, you know, again, the Bridgestone guys, Elliot Mello and Adam Rayberg, who were a big part of the design of this golf ball, they talked about not only just the reactive cover and how it's going to benefit players like Tiger and Bryson and Cooch, but also the everyday golfer. We also got into just what it was like working with Tiger. There were a lot of great stories that Adam Raigberg, who worked with Tiger on this golf ball, had to tell. And it also an interesting story about Fred Couples in a conversation that he had recently with Tiger Woods about the golf ball that both of them were playing and why Tiger told him that he should no longer be using the same golf ball that he was using. So it was a great interview, really insightful, and looking forward to everybody listening to it. I remember talking to you both last year at the PGA show, and we were talking about new product at the time, but you both said, just wait. We've got something big coming in the pipeline. And, you know, quite honestly, I wasn't sure how big it was until I had a chance to go out to Bridgestone HQ and see you guys and test the new Tour B golf balls. How long after you release the previous Tour B do you guys get working on the new version?
It's actually the other way around. We're launching this ball this week at the PGA show, but we're already working on the 2022 and 2024 golf balls. The new 2020 ball, it goes back about 5.5-6 years to when we first started working with these new materials, started working with them in the prototype lab, making prototypes, hitting them on a robot, you know, setting the robot up to mimic Tiger's condition, to mimic the amateur player's condition, and really start to understand the material. So on the cover material standpoint, about 5.5 years of innovation. But you look at other things like the dimple pattern, that's 8+ years of R&D that went into designing the new modified dual dimple and things of that nature. So it's countless years of effort and testing that kind of get us to this point.
So let's kind of first go through these new golf balls here. You've got Tour B X, you've got Tour B XS, you've got the RX and the RXS. So the names of these balls aren't changing, but I want you guys to get into this reactive urethane cover. In my opinion, it's arguably one of the most intriguing equipment stories coming out this year. How did you guys kind of get put on to this new cover design, and what's the biggest benefit of it?
Yeah, so, you know, Bridgestone, we're leaders in innovation. So if you think back to our history of innovation, we were pioneers of going from a wound ball to a solid golf ball with the EV Extraspin years ago, the preset. You know, we were pioneers of low compression golf balls. Think about balls like the MC Lady, low compression three piece, the E6. We were on the forefront of those innovations. We invented the low compression tour ball category in 2009 with RX. So we've been there in terms of leading innovation. And for years, everyone in the industry has kind of been looking at the cover. What is that next cover material? You know, we had Bellotta and we moved to urethane. And that was what we really wanted to solve for. How do you make a cover that has more control and more spin, but doesn't have a negative effect on full shots or off the tee? And so that's the kind of thinking and point of view that we had when we started to study kind of future state covers. And ultimately, through that testing, we developed the reactive urethane cover. And essentially what the reactive urethane cover is it's a combination of traditional urethane, but then it has a bunch of additives in it that we call impact modifiers. And what the impact modifier does is it allows the ball to react to the unique needs of each shot. So when you need the ball to be fast off driver, it's able to do so. Fast moving, great launch conditions. But on the flip side of that, when you need control with an iron or a wedge, the impact modifier allows the ball to stay on the face a little bit longer, take advantage of the grooves and the loft of the club for more control. So it's having a positive impact across all 14 of your clubs, as opposed to in the past, we kind of had to pick or choose our spots in terms of innovation.
So you're able to, as you mentioned, decouple spin and distance with this cover and ball design, which is something that I think goes to show you how far golf ball design has come, you know, let's say in the last, you know, little less than a decade. But I want to know, how has this new cover design and just the new ball design in general, how has it benefited the tour players that I know you worked closely with during testing, players like Tiger, Bryson, Cooch, Freddie, and Lexi?
Yeah, well, all those guys are looking for different type of performance of their golf ball. You take, for instance, a Matt who's looking for maximum distance. We all know he's not the longest guy on tour.
But he picked up some distance.
Exactly. So he's looking for some things inside of his game that fit him specifically. And previously in the past, when you're talking about making a golf ball, you're giving and taking. You're taking away a little distance because you want more greenside spin or vice versa. And with Matt, it's very important for him to keep that feel, which he desires, but then also add a little bit more distance off the tee. That's why he kind of gravitated over from the XS to the X. Then moving over to somebody like a Fred Couples, who, you know, we all know Fred's a long hitter of the golf ball, and he's looking to still continue that long distance. And he tells us week in and week out when we talk to him, you know, distance is still pretty important to me. So I want to make sure I maximize my distance. So that performance is there for him. And then, of course, you move over to the greatest of all time, Tiger Woods, who's looking for very specific things and is very pointed in what he needs from his golf ball. And we all know he wants to hit that low spinner and wants to flight those wedges. And for him, it's all about the windows and making sure the ball goes through it. And now he's even saying, like, hey, a couple extra yards would be really good. Because, I mean, though he has a very fast swing speed, some guys have kind of jumped ahead of him as far as distance. So he kind of joked with us and said, hey, a little bit more distance won't hurt either, but it has to go in my window and has to have the low spinner, and I have to be able to flat down my wedges.
What kind of distance did Tiger pick up during testing?
He's right around 6.5 or 7 yards.
It's pretty significant.
Yes, exactly. And his thing is, you know, as you know, Jonathan, he's always been in a very spinny, soft cover golf ball. And that's what we've always kind of worked to make sure he's in. And he's a low spinner of the ball off the tee, and then even with his long iron. So getting that spin on his long irons and then matching that up on his wedges is very important. So we really need to maximize the launch condition and the spin numbers off the tee. And then also the ball velocity, that ball is leaving his club face. And that was very impactful in getting that, you know, 7 more yards from him off the tee, but then getting that greenside spin with the reactive cover.
With so many different games and playing personalities on your staff, do you ever find it difficult to get everybody's requests into a single golf ball?
It can be difficult, but our guys work very closely with R&D. And we do offer a wider variety than most companies do inside of our Tour D line. So we're able to kind of fit those different types of swings and swing speeds, launch angles. And Bryson, as well as Matt Kuchar, has kind of moved around inside of our line when they work with their coaches and work with their swing. Obviously, we know Bryson getting a lot stronger, and Matt's focusing a little bit more on distance to keep his competitive edge up, which this past year he won twice with, you know, even not being known as the longest. So we make sure they work very closely with our R&D team and our fitting specialists to make sure their golf ball fits their game. So, yeah, it could be, you know, moving around and making sure they're in the right ball, but we ultimately find that really good sweet spot. And they're so tuned in to the R&D process. Tiger, Bryson, Fred, all the guys are so tuned in and working with our R&D team to make sure the ball coming to the market not only fits their game, but the demographic of players that it needs to fit to.
You mentioned a guy like Bryson, who, you know, everybody calls him the scientist. He's a very analytical guy, loves to know numbers. We've talked about, you know, he would put his golf balls in salt water to make sure everything was all centered up. But when he goes from being, you know, he wasn't wiry, I would say, he still has a mass on him, to being, you know, he's a bulked up guy now. I mean, how does that change when it comes to his golf ball? Did you all have to kind of tweak things at all, or what's that process kind of like when you're fitting him into a new product?
Yeah, we were kind of in the 11th hour of getting that prototype figured out when he went through this whole bulking process.
Perfect timing too.
He was trying to get he really wanted to get that club head speed up and really be strong through impact. So for him, that X ball really worked for him and made sure he had enough spin. And, you know, he started producing a little bit more spin with that club head speed, which everybody does. When you increase the velocity of that club, no matter what's happening, if all the other variables stay the same, the spin's obviously going to increase with that as well. So moving into this, you know, 2020 Tour VX with that reactive cover, we were able to knock some of that spin down. And he just raved about it in this final quarter of the year and said, hey, you know, this ball, it's flying a lot straighter, which came from the little bit of knocking down the spin. But he's like, man, I got tons of greenside spin. I got that spin on that 120-yard shot to where I can stop the ball and be very aggressive. So we follow along with him. He pretty much has a direct line to our R&D team. He's made some calls on Saturday afternoons and Sunday afternoons and talks to the guys, you know, pretty head on. And, you know, he doesn't have to talk to anybody except our R&D manager over there and get in his head. And we try to get that direct communication flow going with him as well as the other players.
So what's the one thing you've taken away from ball testing with your tour players this time around with the new Tour B product?
To me, the big thing that sticks out is just the consistent performance increase across all models, across all players. You know, in the past, we'd see one guy that maybe got more green side spin, maybe a little bit more distance here, whatever it might be. But basically, to a man, everybody that we've had hit this golf ball from Tiger down to Korn Ferry players and everywhere in between, they're all seeing about 1.5 to 1.6 miles an hour ball velocity increase off the tee, and they're all seeing about 350 to 450 RPMs of greenside control. So it doesn't matter what clubs they're using, how they swing, what their skill level is, they're all seeing the exact same performance, which is kind of nuts.
You know, the reactive urethane cover is the big story with this golf ball, but I'm sure everybody wants to know, outside of the cover, how much of the rest of the construction of each ball, how much of that has changed going back to the previous version?
Yeah, I mean, at its heart, it's still a Tour B product. So nothing major that was changed. Within each model, there are some minor tweaks to kind of accommodate for, if you will, the new construction of the cover material. One of the examples was there's a slightly different dipple depth on the X and XS just to kind of fit the eye or the window, if you will, of the Brysons and Tigers of the world. But for your listeners, the changes outside of reactive urethane are so minute that that's not what they'll be feeling when they hit the ball. It'll be the reactive urethane that they're feeling at impact and that they're seeing the performance of when the ball's in play.
All right, so I got to ask you about Tiger because he's the one name who naturally comes up when someone mentions a Bridgestone ball. You know, I don't think a lot of people know this, and I know you guys can't confirm it, but Tiger's been playing a Bridgestone ball going all the way back to his Nike days. But this was the very first time that you've really had a full cycle with him because, you know, he signed on with your staff, but he wasn't fully healthy. So this was your first time to really kind of go through him fully on a new product. What was that process like working with him on the new ball and having him provide feedback on the new Tour B?
Yeah, you know, some of your comments are certainly accurate. I think our statistician says that we've contributed in some way, shape, or form to, I think.
That's a nice way to put it.
64 of the wins and 13 of the majors. So we've been
very significant
along the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, having Tiger for the full run this time, it was a completely different process, quite honestly, in a good way. You know, you're working with the greatest player of all time, and certainly he's out there, and rightfully so. He's selfishly trying to build himself the best golf ball, but also his feedback about his prototypes and some of the other things we have him look at ultimately contributes to all four of the Tour Bs and to what now has become reactive urethane. The reactive urethane started as, you know, if you think we had 8 prototypes out there at the first testing, it started as, this is a future state technology. Let's see what Tiger thinks of it the first go around. And it was one of the 8 prototypes. And by the time we got to testing 2, 3 and so on, every prototype had reactive urethane. So he was really a driver. And not only does this technology work, but it's something that we need to get into golf ball now.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite amazing. He was testing this new prototype with the reactive cover before he had truly transitioned to the 2018 XS. We were out there testing this future state cover with him before he transitioned to the ball when it launched in 2018. So we laid it down, like Elliot said, and we had him go through a test of a bunch of them, and he gravitated very quickly to that one that had that, you know, very prototype cover, early prototype cover on it. So for him, he's quite honestly owned this whole process all the way from back, you know, 4 years ago to now putting this ball in play next week at Torrey to complete ownership of the R&D process. And we've always had, as you mentioned, we've always had a great relationship with him and an R&D relationship with him. But it was really cool seeing him go through all the paces. You know, every few months we would see him and he would hit another round of prototypes and, you know, he'd really gravitate to one and always spot on with his numbers, and it was really cool to see him kind of work through that process of making and building that golf ball.
Adam, I know you were out there a lot with Tiger during testing. I'm curious, just from watching him, how does his testing process differ when it comes to the golf ball compared to some of the other pros that you've worked with?
It's like watching a symphony when he's out there hitting the golf ball. I mean, it is pure elegance. You know, he is the greatest ball striker of all time, and he's out there on a Thursday at Medalist down in Jupiter, and it looks like he's hitting shots on number 16 in Augusta. He is making sure every golf ball is hit with purpose, providing feedback while the ball is in the air. You know, when he hits that ball and he looks up, and if it's not in that right window, it's gone. It's not going to get hit again. It's going to get kicked out. So for us, we have to make sure that we're bringing a ball that gives him everything he needs, all the way from a 6-foot putt, which, yes, he practices 6 and 3-foot putts, all the way down to him hitting his driver 318 yards out at Medalist with the wind coming in off the right. Everything has to work out exactly how he needs it. So it's just, I mean, it's something else working with him, and it's truly, an awesome experience.
You mentioned something there, the putting. And this is something that I thought was really interesting that you brought up. He wore out the putting green with the prototype. And he was trying to pick up on things that I don't even think the average golfer would even consider. One of them, the most interesting, being the sound the golf ball made coming off the putter face. Can you just kind of discuss that process and what it was like watching him go through that on the green?
Yeah, it was one of the first things he wanted to do, is just, grab a couple balls. It's funny, he'll reach down in the box with his wedge and tap them up and down on his, that juggling like he does. And it's not just something he's doing for fun. He's listening to the ball hit that wedge and listening to the sound. And he's beginning to gauge by the sound what he perceives as sound and softness. And what's even more amazing is he can decouple sound versus spin and softness. So a ball may be giving him a certain sound, but then he could see the ball checking, and he'll say that. He'll say, it sounds like it's soft, but I don't think it's spinning as much as this other version of the F2 or the 47E or the 27D. And he'll start identifying those things in the golf ball. And boy, he loves picking them out. He will make sure to tell anybody of us, like, don't tell me what it is. I don't want to know. I want to hit them. I don't want to be influenced in any sort of way. And I want to figure out which one's right for me. You know, I want to know the numbers, but I also want to hear it. I want to see it. I want to feel it. And so putting around the greens, he's just putting it. I mean, he's pulling one, he's pulling his. Oh, this is mine. Let me calibrate down to my ball so I can get it back down to normal. All right, let me try this one. And he's really listening to that sound and trying to identify which ball fits his ear, all the way from a 3-foot putt to all the way to hitting drives, like I said before.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but he, when it comes to ball testing, he starts around the green and works his way back. He doesn't start by hitting drivers or long irons or anything like that. He's just trying to see how that ball's reacting around the green first and foremost.
For him, the green side spin and performance is very important. Obviously, he's in the XS, but he wants that spin. And what we do is we spend a copious amount of time around the greens, putting short distance, long distance lag. He hits some chip shots. He hits a lot of in-betweener shots, a 60, 70-yard shot to really put that a lot of spin and club his feet on the ball to make sure it checks. And then he takes it out to the course. We go out there and he hits, 7 irons and 6 irons, 4 irons, and then works back to his 3-winning driver. And once he kind of works backwards from there, he kind of figures out, once he gets to the tee and it's doing what he wants as far as window, he's figured out the golf ball that fits his game. So, yeah, the green side is very important for him, which makes this reactive cover phenomenal for him. He was so literally excited the first prototype we tested him, and we'd see him at an event and he would say, like, hey, when are we gonna have some more prototypes for me to test down in Jupiter? You got any more of those ones with that crazy cover on it? So he always kind of gravitated that one, because as long as he can get the distance he needs and get that more spin around the greens, he's a happy guy.
So let's switch gears to Tour B RX and Tour B RXS. The Tour B X and Tour B XS, those are your tour level swing speed golf balls. It's the ones that you're going to see guys like Bryson and Tiger and Cooch playing. And golfers, I feel like they know the RX and the RXS. They know it's a urethane ball, but it's not the tour version. That's kind of the way that they've kind of been able to differentiate the two. It's not the golf ball that I see out on the PGA Tour. But I know things are changing this year with these two golf balls. And this may be one of the most surprising stories around the RX and the RXS. And I want you to tell me the story about Fred Couples' decision to switch to this golf ball, because I know Tiger actually played a part in his switch to the ball.
Yeah. So, we're starting the process of converting players into the new ball. We have 4 in the arsenal. So while a player like Bryson or Tiger, they're 120 plus mile an hour swing speed, naturally only two of the models could potentially make sense for them. But you get into a player like Fred, it makes sense to look at all 4 of them and kind of holistically see which direction should we take this thing. And so as we look at the reactive urethane and the new models, the increased ball velocity, the increased control, especially in the RX, RXS series, it started to become interesting for Fred. So we went through some rounds of testing with him, and he definitely saw the distance increase with the lower compression golf balls, a little bit hotter off the face for him. And in fact, at one point in time, he kind of made some comments. His RX was almost too long. He'd have to relearn too much with his mid-iron, so it wasn't necessarily a good fit for him, which we thought was kind of funny. And so ultimately, he settled in on RXS. I think it gives him the, you know, he's able to compress that ball off the tee. He's able to boom it on off the tee where he needs to. But at the same time, RXS, to your point, now truly is a tour-level golf ball, thanks to our breakthrough in the cover side. Fred's able to stop that ball and spin it the way that he needs to into and around the greens. He's looking forward to teeing it up at Augusta this year. So, I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know about the tour quality of these golf balls. If you've got a former Masters champion putting them in play at Augusta, I think that speaks volumes.
And what about Tiger in this role? How did he kind of play into it? Because I know Fred and Tiger kind of bounce ideas off each other, but correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Tiger kind of say, hey, man, we probably shouldn't be playing the same golf balls anymore?
Yeah, you know, it's like anybody, you know, change isn't easy. It doesn't matter if you're Jonathan Wall or Fred Couples, change isn't easy. So
I get that.
As Fred was starting to realize that that he's going to a new golf ball. Fred's one of those guys, he doesn't switch around often. He finds something he likes and he kind of sticks with it. So to kind of reinforce that he was making the right move here, you know, obviously he trusts our fitting and our R&D team, but, you know, he has access to the greatest player of all time, so why not give him a phone call before finally pulling the trigger on the switch? And yeah, just like you said, he called up Tiger, and Tiger basically said, dude, we can't play the same golf ball anymore. It's time for you to make a switch. And so I think that put Fred at ease a little bit probably. And he's excited about the RXS. He's, you know, he plays it in the yellow version, which we do have available at retail for the first time. But Fred really likes that yellow ball. He can see it a lot better in flight. Even when talking about prototypes and stuff, it's almost difficult to test a white prototype with Fred because he's so comfortable over a yellow golf ball at this point.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is an unprecedented change because at the Masters, you're going to have three of your four golf balls in play, which I don't know anybody else that's got their two tour-level golf balls for the higher swing speeds and then one of the ones for the lower swing speeds for a guy like Fred who, again, still booms it off the tee. All right. I got to ask you, you guys are big into ball fitting, and I've talked a lot about the importance of not only getting fit for your golf clubs, but your golf ball. How many ball fittings do you have logged in your database, and how important is that data when it comes to helping fit just even an average golfer for the golf ball?
Yeah, we have over 350,000 fittings that we've done live. That means recorded data to where we shift that over to R&D. They analyze it. They start looking at it. So it's very important, not only from our tour level golf balls all the way down to our E12. We look at the data, we start analyzing. I mean, as you know, from year to year, club data kind of changes. You know, MOI gets moved in different spots and faces change and spin starts going down to where we can analyze that and see what kind of spin numbers best represent what a, you know, 15 handicap does, or say what a person that swings 105 does versus 100. And, you know, 101. So we can really analyze that. So the data is very important for us. Our R&D team takes really great pride in getting that data from the ball fitters on a weekly basis and analyzing it and trying to discover where the market's going as far as not only our competitors, but also equipment. That way we can build golf balls that fit right to what the consumer demands as far as greenside all the way down to your drivers.
So the reason I'm bringing up ball fitting is something that I think that's really cool and quite honestly revolutionary that Bridgestone's been doing for a little bit, but I know that you're really starting to push it a lot more, and that's the VFit, the video ball fitting report that you all do. It's an app that you can have on your phone. I actually went through the process when I was at Bridgestone HQ. It's as simple as, you know, getting your swing recorded on video, and they send you a report back with your club speed, ball speed, launch angle, spin, carry, total. I mean, it gives you everything that you could possibly need. You know, it's important to go get fit, and not everybody can get to a fitter and this is a great option. Could you just discuss a little bit about this VFIT, the video ball fitting report, and just kind of how it plays into just fitting golfers into one of these four models that you're going to have in the new Tour B line?
Absolutely. So what we set out to do at Bridgestone was to make ball fitting even more inclusive. And so we've actually been developing this type of fitting ever since I was in R&D. I'm obviously in marketing now, but about 6 years ago when I was in R&D, the iPhone 5 came out to where you could record a video at 120 frames per second. And me and my fellow R&D technicians started recording our swing and thinking, like, this is really cool for coaches, you know, to see the swing. We discovered that not only can you see the swing, but you can see the golf ball pretty well. So now, you know, fast forward to 5-6 years later from when we went down that route, most everybody has a phone. You know, I'm on a phone right now talking to you that's capable of being a launch monitor to tell the data. So all you need to do is record a swing in slow-mo with your phone and then submit it to bridgestonegolf.com /VFIT, and we'll analyze that swing and then look at the data that we get back from that. Our proprietary algorithms are able to measure the ball velocity, the launch angle, the backspin, the club head speed to get the total and carry. But then we also, outside of that data, we have a consultative method to where you will actually talk to a person and they will fit you the rest of the way. So yeah, we have all the algorithms and technology behind it, but it's also a human touch involved with getting this ball fitting done. So somebody's going to sit right here in Covington. You know, if Jonathan Wall submits his slow-mo video, which you did,
which
somebody
did
over here in Covington is going to look at that, and they're going to look at what ball you used to play and what model you used to play and why you played that ball and what you're looking for in your golf ball. And they're going to cross-reference that with the technology and the data they're going to get back and give you a golf ball recommendation. And maybe the most important thing is the ball fitting report, where it's going to give you all those numbers. A lot of people have no idea still to this day what they swing or what their ball speed is or what their launch angle is. And probably most importantly, what their spin is, you know, to where they can control the ball off the tee and then on down through the rest of their clubs around the green. So a lot of great data, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to making this VFIT application work best for the consumer.
You know, I know you both are incredibly excited about this new golf ball technology that you have. And, you know, Tim and I recently discussed something on the Fully Equipped podcast where we kind of said, what's the biggest area of growth in the equipment industry? And we both agreed it's very likely golf ball. I feel like I already know the answer here, but I'm wondering if you guys would agree with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you think golf ball, you know, we talk all the time about equipment and technology. Why do you think it's quite possibly the biggest area for growth in the industry right now?
Without getting in too much trouble with our friends at the USGA, there's 72 plus shots hit per round with 14 plus clubs. And, you know, there's not necessarily regulation on all those clubs or shots at this point in time. So we play within the rules that exist, and then we innovate beyond them where there's opportunity. And trust me, there's a lot of opportunity.
Awesome. Elliot, Adam, hey, really appreciate your time hopping on the Fully Equipped podcast.
Glad we could do it.
Enjoyed it again.
And many thanks to the guys from Bridgestone Golf for spending time with Fully Equipped. A lot of great nuggets in that interview, Jonathan. That was great. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you're looking for more gear content, make sure to check out our social pages. You can find us on Twitter at @fully_equipped. And on Instagram, you can find us @fullyequippedgolf. We look forward to y'all tuning in next week. Thanks for listening.